please the court, my name is Helen Kim and I represent the appellant in this case, Tomas Lefskounis. There were three issues that were raised on appeal, and the first issue had to do with whether or not the district court erred when it didn't grant Mr. Lefskounis minor role adjustment. In this case, the court ignored the guidelines on minor role. In that guideline section, it says that the court is supposed to look at the lack of knowledge or whether or not a defendant had an understanding of a scope or structure of what was going on.
Well, this scheme really couldn't have happened without a straw purchaser, so he was clearly a necessary player in the scheme, right?
He was necessary in the sense that, yes, the straw purchaser is the one that is signing the documents at the time of the closing, perhaps, with the mortgage company. But in this particular scheme, there were so many other players involved. And specifically during the filings and during the sentencing memorandum, there was a reference to the fact that not only were there three companies that were involved that were under investigation, they had been taking checks and distributing it back and forth among themselves, but there were also numerous agents at a mortgage company. There was the individual who, of course, got Mr. Lefskounis to be involved in the fraud. There were people at the title company, and there were actually attorneys who were ignoring questions that were asked by Mr. Lefskounis. In particular, there was one time where other times he was just told to sign the documents. One time he noticed something on one of the quickly flipped documents. He asked the attorney. That attorney ignored his question, and only later did he re-ask it to the individual who brought him into the scheme. But it was already too late, essentially, especially for that particular
person. So is your bottom line that he can play a necessary role, but he could also be minor?
Absolutely. And in fact, I believe that that's what the guidelines suggest and what this court also suggests in prior opinions. In the guidelines, a note says that even if he is involved in something, he's not precluded from consideration, and that includes in cases where he's only being held for the properties or the drugs is what the example is in the guidelines that he performed. The court has said previously that it's not enough to just say that somebody was important or essential or integral. But in this case, that's exactly what the district court did in this particular situation.
Was you're saying that the whole operation is bigger than the seven transactions he was involved in?
Absolutely, and the record is clear that that's the fact.
Wasn't held responsible for anything beyond the seven, was he?
He was only held responsible for the seven properties, but what was stated and not opposed by the government is that there were over 40 or 50 other transactions that had been done. One of the FBI agent who was interviewed, and it was reported in the PSR, said that there was actually a real estate developer who was paying straw purchasers directly out of his bank account. That was in the pre-sentence report as well. And again, the question...
And did Mr. Lefskounis receive $30,000 for his role in this?
He didn't, and that was a big dispute during the sentencing hearing as well, was the mischaracterization of that $30,000. Mr. Lefskounis was told, and at different times there were $30,000 that were put into his account. He did not touch that. He did not use that. In fact, that money would then go back to the co-schemers. And mind you, this is a case where, as we know, there was over $4 million that was obtained by loans. Mr. Lefskounis did not get any of that because his understanding was that he would make a profit when the properties legitimately resold at a higher price because they were trying to help this builder that was trying to get the properties off the ground initially through these initial loans. But the $30,000 was not his profit. He actually did have access to the money. He never used it, touched it, until it became absolutely clear that he was not going to receive any money, that the whole thing was a scam. And he found out that his credit was ruined when he went to an electronics store to purchase something and found this out. There were many things that were going on that made it so that he did ultimately keep $30,000, definitely, but that was not because it was an arrangement or it was something that was part of the scheme. The second...
I just had a question. Was this something done under some kind of program?
I'm sorry?
You said you're trying to help this builder. Was there something... that somebody is doing something with some other directive? I think there was a Community Reinvestment Act.
This was nothing related to that. And again, because there was an ongoing investigation, the facts that we learned were mostly because Mr. Liskunas was cooperating with the government and therefore more information would be disclosed during the course of those multiple meetings. But this was allegedly, according to what the agent said to the pre-sentence reporter, this was a real estate development company, and that was what was said to Mr. Liskunas. They said there's a builder who needs somebody to buy his homes, and so if you have good credit, you can sign these papers and get multiple mortgages, and when we resell the properties legitimately, then you can then get your profit because of the difference in the sale price. What they also told him, though, was that somebody else, specifically a company called American Mortgage, would make the first six-month payments on all of these properties for Mr. Liskunas. When he found out that those properties were not being paid for, he asked the individual who recruited him what was going on. That individual wrote him two checks that bounced. And at the time that the individual wrote the checks, he said, well, here's some money. Why don't you make the payments? I don't know what's going on. So there was a lot of deception that was going on, which is why repeatedly we argued that not only did he have a minor role when there were clearly many other players and the court failed to do the necessary analysis by looking at whether or not Mr. Liskunas was more or less culpable than the average participant and instead just focused on the transactions.
Did he get any credit for cooperation?
Pardon?
Did he get any benefit for cooperation?
He got nothing for the cooperation, which is, of course, the third argument that we submitted in our brief and that was argued quite a bit during the sentencing hearing. Mr. Liskunas cooperated at length, and the error that was committed here, or the abuse of discretion that occurred by the district court, was when the court was so reluctant and so hesitant to, in the court's quotes, to intrude upon an area that it believed that would be up to the government to do something about. Even at the very end of the sentencing hearing, after numerous times I asked the court whether or not it was going to acknowledge at all the cooperation that had been done. Even the court at the very end said, well, maybe there's still something that could be done. And what the court was referring to was a Rule 35 motion by the government and essentially kept saying that it was a prosecutorial area that it was not going to get into. Ultimately, when Mr. Liskunas was asking for the cooperation credit, and certainly when he entered the plea declaration rather than going by agreement, he fully presumed that the district court would not sidestep the issue entirely as it did.
When the court declined to lower the sentence based on cooperation, there was an explanation where the court noted he had already been lowered by 3 points, because of acceptance of responsibility and coming in early, and he gets those points off, and he talks about him getting credit, but then he specifically says that he knew he could lower the sentence but was choosing not to because he said, I'm just not exercising my discretion to give you that break. So his ultimate bottom line was he knew he had the authority to lower.
And respectfully, I would say that the first thing is that it initially issued a judgment with absolute silence on the issue. And in fact, there was a back and forth dialogue that went on and on because we were questioning why the district court was so reluctant and why it kept making statements that it was not going to do anything. The court said, I don't see how I can do anything about it at this point. That's not my position. And in fact, when it came down to the U.S. attorney saying, well, Judge, tell me if I'm not correct, but you understand that you have the authority to do this. Then the court did say, well, it said many things, including, well, I'm not going to plea bargain with you. But ultimately, the court was looking at the seriousness. It was misapplying the acceptance of responsibility guideline section, because that has to do with pleading guilty in a timely fashion, not going into the government for hours and hours on end and testifying in a grand jury.
Okay, you're at the end of your time. I'll give you, though, some time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Kim. Mr. Bindi.
Good morning, and may it please the court. The district court did not ignore the guidelines on the minor role adjustment. The district court correctly applied the guideline on the minor role adjustment. That adjustment is available to a defendant who is substantially less culpable than the average participant in the offense, not someone who is marginally less culpable than the most culpable participants in the offense. And that is the argument that is being made by the defendant. He is asking this court, as he asked the district court to do, to compare his level of culpability to the culpability of the most culpable participants in the offense. The district court found that he was an integral and essential part of this offense. He was held responsible only for the seven transactions that he participated in. And the district court, in effect, found that he was at least an average participant in those seven transactions. With regard to the reasonableness of the sentence, the district court clearly understood.
Let me go back just for a minute. In terms of his the role in the scheme, so just an example, by way of example, if his role was just to staple the mortgage papers, and he did that repeatedly, and that's all he did, you wouldn't have any quarrel with him getting a minor role adjustment there, would you? Under the definition you've given us?
Yeah. I think probably not, although, you know, again, it's a contextual matter. It depends on the extent of the scheme, the extent of the defendant's involvement, and what looks like an average participant in the scheme. I you know, stapling the papers together, probably that's a minor role. But showing up at the closings and signing the documents and acting as the straw purchaser in seven transactions over 2 months is not a minor role.
Now, the prosecution said he did everything that was asked of him. I mean, you indicated on the record at the sentencing that he did everything he was asked of. He provided the information that furthered the investigation. Isn't that the kind of information the court should consider under 3553A?
Absolutely.
And by the statement that the prosecutor made, it was clear the court had some confusion about how to apply that.
I don't think so. I don't think that's an accurate characterization of the record. I think the court clearly understood its discretion to go lower based on the cooperation, even without a plea agreement with the government and without a government motion. But the court made two points. First, it's difficult to quantify the value of the cooperation in this context. No other prosecutions were brought based on the cooperation. It's information, and an investigation is ongoing. And so in that context, it's difficult to quantify the value of the cooperation. And the second point the district court made was that the negative factors under 3553A, specifically the defendant's status as an illegal alien and his criminal history, outweighed mm-hmm. the value of the cooperation. And so that's why there was not a further adjustment made on that basis. And so for these reasons, we respectfully request that this court affirm the judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bindi. Counsel, I'll give you another minute.
Your Honors, I realize that I didn't have a chance to address the second issue in the brief, but because I have a minute, I'm just going to rebut what was just said. And the issue of being difficult to quantify is, of course, not where the court can end its inquiry, because if there was a personal injury case and if there was pain and suffering and if it's difficult to quantify what the amount should be, it doesn't mean that it should end there. And, in fact, that is what makes the court responsible for asking any further questions if necessary. In this case, Mr. Liskunas was issued a sentence that was unreasonable and wrong and unjust. He ultimately is asking for the court to reverse and remand the case for a resentencing and for all the reasons that we noted in our brief. Thank you.
Ms. Kim, you were appointed?
Yes.
Well, thank you for your fine representation of your client and for your brief and your oral argument. Thank you, Mr. Bindi, for your excellent brief and argument. We'll take the case under advisement.